In the history of the Murdoch family dynasty, there are reoccurring motifs that occur across decades. Midnight trains happen to be one of them. I know, not something a lot of us necessarily have as a common thread throughout our lives, but with the Murdochs, it seems to be a running theme. Fatal catastrophes, which both leave behind tragedy and fortune. Both of these things were brought to Randolph Murdoch Sr. throughout his life. See, the Murdoch family was already prosperous long before any of them became lawyers. Before going into real estate development in Beaufort and Hampton counties, Randolph's father, Josiah Putman Murdoch II, acquired his initial wealth in Charleston County through the phosphate mining and commercial fertilizer industries, these industries located in Charleston County. ER, prior to and throughout the duration of the Great Depression, Jin Jr., sometimes known as Little Ed, was a neighbor of the Murdoch family and ran a family farm in the Alameda area. Both the Jins and the Murdochs shared a few characteristics. Although they had more good fortune than their neighbors, they were forced to accept the fact that the railroad would always be a part of their lives and would always be in their front yards. Jin would ride the rail cars up and down from Varnville to Frog Hollow and on Alameda, sharing cornmeal, cane syrup, and stovewood with less fortunate families along the way, as stated in an early book on the history of Varnville titled Railroads and Sawmills. Jin would ride the rail cars up and down. Later on, he would involve his boys in these many acts as a good Samaritan. When Jin was 18 years old, he was riding between railroad cars, and as they were being moved out of the spur leading to the gin mill, Jin was unaware that the moving process had been finished while he was riding between the cars. The train had already started moving towards Augusta, Georgia, before he realized what was happening. And according to the writings of the historians of Varnville, Jin made an attempt to leap off the train in front of the Murdoch home, but he ended up getting entangled in the cars. According to the local history, Randolph Murdoch Sr. was the first person to arrive at Jin. After dragging him to safety and transporting his injured body back to his frightened family, he was the first person to reach Jin. In order to receive appropriate medical care, Jin was forced to postpone his trip until the following day when his father, who's a state senator, returned from Columbia. On that day, a surgeon saw on the bloody Charleston hospital table Jin and said, "You know what? This is so bad, we got to operate." Lost one of his legs after that. Just after the turn of the century, Murdoch had already made significant progress in establishing a legal dynasty in the South. In 1910, shortly after graduating from the School of Law at the University of South Carolina, Murdoch established his own legal business, which at first consisted of just him. It is said that he never posted a shingle with his name outside the Hampton Law Office because everyone in town knew where the Murdoch law business was. The family mythology that's been passed down from generation to generation. Even though everyone in the small community of Hampton appeared to know the attorney, Murdoch even served as the town of Varnville's official town attorney for a fee of $25 a year. Nobody at that time could have likely predicted the legal behemoth that the Murdoch law firm would evolve into in that part of the state. Nor could they have realized that his company would become the backdrop setting for an alleged multi-million-dollar decade-long crime spree during which one of Murdoch's descendants would be accused of taking advantage of the reputation and clientele that had taken 100 years to develop. An inside look at the emergence and fall of the Murdoch family in South Carolina is marked by power, status, and luxury. It's not all bad. As you can understand from the beginning here, it was goodwill. It was good deeds that were trying to be performed in an area of the country that really needed it, that really needed some help from anyone who may have had an upper hand. His great-grandson, Richard Alexander Murdoch, who was once a partner at the ancestral firm, is now on the other side of the table of justice. He's accused of stealing more than $8 million from legal clients, partners, and other people who trusted him, and facing 74 criminal charges for this alleged theft as well. Far cry from the goodwill and the good deeds of generations that came prior to this round of Murdochs. We go back to 1920. The elder Murdoch took a position as the solicitor for the 14th Judicial Circuit, which was comprised of five counties in South Carolina's Low Country, stretching the rural swamps of Colton County to the resort beaches of Hilton Head Island. The elder Murdaugh's responsibilities included representing clients, civil, criminal cases. It was a post that would remain in his family's possession for almost 86 years. 86 years as a solicitor and in district elections. They'd face little opposition from other candidates. His son, Randolph Jr., and his grandson, Randolph III, will continue the family tradition of holding that office and exercising prosecution authority over the territory for a total of three different generations. His comings and goings, appearances and garden parties, family holidays, even his wife's bridge party and flower judging made it into the press. His name was constantly mentioned in the society sections of newspapers. Murdaugh was active in all aspects of the community, as well as the state's government. If you were in an area, you knew the Murdaughs. You had some sort of involvement with them, whether you liked it or not. It's said that he contributed to the cost of the clay needed to construct a road leading from Hampton to the nearby town of Fairfax, and he even ran his own newspaper for a short period of time. This was a man who was originally very, very invested in the community, a community that he wielded great power over. In the courtrooms of that era, the fearless and skilled Murdaugh legal mythology had its start. It continues to this day, at least it did. Even though Hampton County had a population of approximately 25,000 people at the time, Solicitor Murdaugh did not shy away from high-profile cases that extended beyond the confines of the county. In fact, during his career, he had served as both a prosecutor and an attorney for a state governor. Early example was the flamboyant courtroom theatrics that his family's descendants would deploy in that trial. He forced the governor to stand in a prisoner's block while the indictment was read. In other occasions, he was responsible for bringing charges against bankers, obtaining convictions against corrupt preachers, and if there was a murder trial going on, you better bet it was going to be filled people wanting to watch the Murdaughs in action. It looked like everything was going to work out for the aspiring lawyer from the South. However, on February 28, 1940, all this goodwill in the community, people knew him, people loved him. Headline appeared in the Hampton County Guardian that read, "Grand Jury Lauds Murdaugh, recommend for another term in office." Everything was looking great. People loved him. The image that he had gained in the community through his hard work and good deeds was all coming to fruition. The sky was bright, and the future was up to the Murdaughs. However, at approximately 1 in the morning, the Associated Press reported that Murdaugh was leaving a late-night poker game on a Friday, and his vehicle became disabled when it was driving on the tracks of a railroad. It's reported in the Hampton County Guardian, his hometown newspaper, that while he was returning home late from a visit with friends, and there was no court scheduled for that day, so he had a night. He could kind of go out, let it go, let loose with some friends, and all the stress of his life could take a little break from. However, on that July 19th, 1940, while Murdaugh's car was crossing a railway approximately 4 miles east of Varnville, the vehicle suddenly came to a stop in the center of a crossing for unknown reasons. And on that very track, just down the way, a large freight train with the letters C and WC on the side was heading straight towards that crossing. During the investigation that followed, the locomotive driver stated that Murdaugh had raised his hand, given a wave to the approaching train. Kind of a bizarre thing to do when you're in the vehicle that is being approached by a train. If you have time to wave and you see it coming, one would think you would get out of that vehicle as to not be hit in the vehicle with the train. Following a progression of the sound, the steam, and the trembling, rumbling, and the headlight beams coming closer and closer, Randolph Murdaugh Sr. was overcome by the brightness, the roar, and the speed, and was struck by that train. Engineer W.W. Bartlett stated he did not spot the car near the rails until around 40 yards away, and that Murdaugh had his hand lifted as though waving at the train crew. Bartlett's testimony was presented in court. However, when the train drew nearer, the driver stated the vehicle brought it up to a stop right on the rails. So initially, in the road, and then as the train gets closer, on to the tracks. The Hampton County Guardian published an article on July 24, 1940, stating that the impact hurled the automobile approximately 900 feet up the track, completely wrecking it, and that Murdaugh's body was found beside the track approximately 100 feet from the crossing. According to multiple reports published in the Guardian, Murdaugh had been experiencing health issues dating back to 1939 and had only recently been discharged from the hospital in the month of April. Historians from that era have pondered whether or not he was in poor health at the time of the incident. Without any concrete evidence, residents of the area and historians questioned and speculated about whether or not alcohol played a role in the accident. After all, he was out with friends earlier in the night, no court the next day. No clear indication in either the historical documents or the journalistic stories that this was the case. Others make oblique references to death by suicide, once again, for no apparent reason. Do the conditions at the railroad crossing play a role in the accident, or may it have been a problem with the vehicle, malfunction, something like that? Or is something more nefarious going on? The jury serving the Hampton County coroner concluded that the death was the result of an accident, although it was highly unlikely that the general public would ever learn the precise factors that had contributed to the incident. The Murdaugh family had a hunch that they would later testify to in court. It would not be the last unexplained death or sad event surrounding the Murdaugh family in the coming years. The shooting deaths of Paul and Maggie Murdaugh in June of 2021, which are still unsolved. The death of Stephen Smith in 2015, which was initially attributed to a hit-and-run accident. And the death of Gloria Satterfield in 2018, which was initially ruled natural, despite being attributed to a trip-and-fall accident. Those four death investigations now orbit the modern Murdaugh family as Alex Murdaugh sits in jail in the state capitol and in trial every day this week. It even passed up to the next generation. In one of the next generation who's also deceased, Paul Murdaugh, 2019, he was charged with three charges of felony boating under the influence after an alcohol-fueled early morning boating expedition in Hampton County resulted in the death of his friend, a minor named Mallory Beach, multiple injuries to other people. Less than a week after the deadly train accident in 1940, the 14th Circuit Court of Appeals acquired a new solicitor, the person of Randolph Buster Murdaugh Jr., who would continue to build the legacy and fortune of the Murdaugh family to begin. He would seek some of the retribution through the court system for the killing of his father by going after the CSX Transportation Company. They may trace their roots back to the ancient Charleston and Western Carolina Freight Line. This was an ancestor of CSX Transportation. According to the archives, Randolph Sr. had litigated against the rail corporation on a few occasions before his passing. However, historical evidence suggests that this was not a primary emphasis of his profession. In the decades that followed his untimely death, however, things changed for the Murdaugh family and the law practice that they owned. According to records on the Hampton County Court of Common Pleas on October 1st, 1940, Randolph Jr. brought a lawsuit against the Charleston and Western Carolina Railway Company for the wrongful death of Randolph Murdaugh Sr. The lawsuit brought action on behalf of Randolph's widow, Mary Murdaugh, and her children for the wrongful death of said Randolph Murdaugh Sr. According to the allegations that were made in the lawsuit, the train was going from Yamassee to Varnville at a high rate of speed, but did not blast a whistle or ring a bell when it reached the Camp Branch crossing. Murdaugh's view was impeded by trees and heavy underbrush and was a misty night, placing him in sudden and imminent peril, according to the allegations made in the lawsuit, which also stated that the crossing and its approach was in rough, washed out, and dangerous conditions. Buster Murdaugh, the original one, requested a verdict of $100,000 for the wrongful death of his father, according to the court documents that were filed on September 22nd of 1941. The issue was resolved. The sum in question was not made to the public, though. After the terrible train catastrophe that occurred in the early 1900s, Randolph Sr. was in the right place at the right time to help little Ed Ginn, who was injured in the accident. Remember, he was the one who lost the leg, prevented him from serving his country in World War I. This was something that he deeply regretted for the rest of his life and spent the remainder of his days hobbling around with what was a cork leg back then. In the succeeding years, other injured persons would come to rely on the Murdaughs and his law partners for legal assistance, and they would do so while simultaneously collecting fortunes in the process over the course of the following century. The Murdaugh family managed both the private law business and the 14th Circuit Court of Appeals. They practiced both civil and criminal law during that time period. It was not unusual. As Randolph Murdaugh's successors continued in his footsteps, the Murdaugh private law firm acquired more legal partners and legal prowess along the way. This not only contributed to the Murdaugh family's wealth, prominence, and connections, it also enabled them to devote a significant portion of their time to the prosecution of criminal cases. In fact, in 1986, when Randolph Murnau III was sworn into office, the state ethics law did not permit lawyers to prosecute criminal cases or handle personal injury claims. However, by that time, the Murnau law firm had already amassed all of the legal strength it required. They had brought in partners, Peters Murnau, Parker, Elstroth, and Dietrich. PA had grown from a one-man firm that had been established in 1910 to become the South Carolina powerhouse, with offices located in numerous counties, more than a dozen attorneys, more than 50 local workers. Randolph III had returned to the family practice only after he retired from governmental services in early 2006. PMPED, as it was also known, developed a name for itself in representing the little guy against corporate giants. During its history, only served one significant corporate client, Palmetto Electric Cooperative, according to its website. In the decades that followed the passing of the elder Murnau, PMPED would defend scores of clients, take on a large number of corporate enemies, yet few targets appeared to be as preferred as the rail companies, especially CSX Transportation. Before it was taken down in 2022, the PMPED website featured a long list of victories that resulted in settlements or judgments for several millions of dollars. A significant number of these victories obtained against CSX. Majority of those cases involved railroad accidents that took place outside of the county, but were filed in Hampton County Court of Common Pleas due to the state venue laws of the day, which allowed for more venue shopping. From 92 to 2002, PMPED filed four dozen personal injury cases against CSX, and from 1995 to 2002, CSX paid $18.8 million in verdicts and settlements, according to a 2002 article in Forbes magazine titled Home Court Advantage. According to the laws that were in effect during the time period, a lawsuit could be brought against a company like CSX in Hampton County if the company owned property there or conducted business there. This was the case even if the train accident occurred in another county in South Carolina and the people involved lived there. According to the website of PMPED, these cases brought in much-needed money and relief for medical or end-of-life expenses for injured motorists or rail workers and their families. In addition, the cases that PMPED took on and won brought about major improvements and reforms to railway and transportation safety laws and practices, which they contend have saved the lives of countless individuals. Locals in Hampton County have jokingly referred to one of the most impressive structures in Hampton as CSX Towers, or the house that CSX built. This building is the PMPED legal firm, which is considered to be one of the city's most prestigious addresses. The Murnaus were able to freely and publicly joke about the fact that taking on the railroads became such an intrinsic part of the family law's dynasty as a result of their success. During a speech that was made during a public gathering in Hampton County in 2018, Randolph Murnau III made a lighthearted jest about how a train had killed his grandfather in 1940 and that trains had been responsible for the deaths of local residents ever since. In the late 1990s, legal reformists started to take a closer look at South Carolina's tort and venue laws. In 2004, the American Tort Reform Foundation ranked Hampton County as the third worst judicial hellhole in the country. This ranking was based on the number of out-of-county cases that were handled there, as well as the above-average amounts of judgments and settlements that were awarded. Officials from the state and local governments in charge of economic development started to wonder if the tort and venue laws that were in effect at the time, as well as PMPED's success in using them to their advantage legally, were having an adverse effect on the region's ability to attract new businesses and industries. Essentially, if you wanted to sue somebody and you were good with the Murdaughs, you would probably win that case. Checks and balances over time kind of seem to go out the window. According to a report that was published in Forbes in 2000, the legal environment in Hampton County, which is one of the 46 counties in South Carolina that has the lowest per capita income, was directly responsible for the decision by Walmart, of all places, not to locate in the county. Too risky. Might get sued. Forbes noted that at the time, the partner at PMPED named John E. Parker refuted the notion by calling it a propaganda tool and claiming that if anyone can find such a company, he'll promise not to sue it if it moves to Hampton and represent the company free of charge. Then in February of 2005, the Supreme Court of South Carolina issued a ruling that would alter the venue laws of the state and restrict the level of forum shopping, meaning you can't just go there because you know you'll probably win. As a result, the number of cases that could be filed from other cities or towns to Hampton began to decrease as a result. After a series of high-profile criminal cases involving Randolph's great-grandson, Alex, who is now accused of stealing millions of dollars from PMPED and its clients, the law firm that was founded by Murdaugh and was once dominated by the Murdaughs, name changed to the Parker Law Group in late 2021. This was done in honor of Johnny Parker's service to the firm. Alex is now accused of stealing millions of dollars from PMPED and its clients. And that doesn't exist anymore. The PMPED, it's done. Murdaugh, all gone, obviously, for good reason. Today, only one member of Randolph's lineage, Randolph IV, is licensed to practice law in this newly established company. And there's currently no member of the Murdaugh family working for the 14th Circuit Solicitor's Office. Following the initial filing of criminal charges against Alex Murdaugh, the 14th Circuit, his former law firm, and even one of his brothers all issued statements severing their legal ties with him. Additionally, an order from the South Carolina Supreme Court has suspended his license to practice law in the state for more than a century. That name Murdaugh, synonymous with law, order, and power. In present day, a judge or jury convicted Alex Murdaugh and sentenced him consecutively for every crime he is currently charged with. The punishment would theoretically be equivalent to the next seven centuries in a South Carolina prison. It is truly amazing how dynasties can fall. Keep it here for coverage of the Alex Murdaugh trial. Day-to-day discussions and audio from the courtroom. We'll have it for you. My name is Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter at TonyBPod. Until next time, for all of us here, thanks for listening.